Hail cheaters and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm great, Josh. Happy to be here for a special episode of Always Cheating. It's the book club edition of the podcast.
We're here with David Wardale. David, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, guys.
David has written a book called Wasting Your Wild Card, The Method and Madness of Fantasy Football. I have read it. Brandon has read it. Brandon, what did you think about this book?
I thought this book was fantastic, and I'm just not trying to big you up because you're on the podcast, David, but...
You can do anyway.
It's fun. It's well-written. There are lots of great anecdotes about playing in mini-leagues and stats. Basically, everything that a hardcore fantasy manager wants to read, and then it... helps them rationalize how addicted to the game they actually are. So this book will facilitate lots of future fantasy managers.
I think I said when I was messaging with David that it was kind of like a fever pitch for the fantasy football crowd. You know, it's sort of just a fever pitch, especially as an American. Fever pitch was such a great book to read because it's just about the culture of football and sort of getting into it and the experience of getting into it. And I felt like this book really did that for the fantasy game.
And that could be on the front cover, you know. That just sounds great.
Save it for the second edition, maybe. Josh from Always Cheating says.
Before we start talking too much about the book, David, I thought it was important that we sort of set the table for who you are. First off, what team do you support?
I am an Arsenal fan. Fever pitch again.
Okay,
so that makes two of us.
So let's take the temperature. How are you feeling about the Unai Emery regime coming in?
I'm strangely optimistic, which is not good. I'm a very, very bad tipster, so I'm concerned that I'm optimistic. But, you know, he's got a pedigree, isn't he, this guy? He knows what he's doing. And the players he's bought are exactly the players that Wenger just refused to buy. You know, a decent keeper, a great defensive midfielder, a spine in that spine of the team. Because you don't need any – he doesn't need the midfielders, doesn't need the strikers. He's got all those. So, we'll see. But it looks good so far, but...
Lots of great fantasy options.
Aubameyang.
Yeah, cool. There you go. He's a must.
He's in my team.
Yeah. Maybe Socrates. We'll see. I'm holding out some hope for Socrates, you know, once he starts playing.
Yeah.
I just want to have a player named Socrates in my fantasy team more than anything.
Well, they'll probably say Socrates.
They may have said Socrates back in the day as well, right? In the, when he was in the original.
I can't remember. His full name is something horrendous, isn't it? Which Paul Merson was struggling with throughout the season. But yeah.
If there are any fans of
need to find that out.
Any fans of the great American film Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure can just call him Socrates.
Right, exactly. So, David, I know you've had a long. Can you talk a little bit about the fantasy football scout relationship? I know you've been sort of working with them, writing for them for a pretty long time now, right? Like more than 5 years? Is it that long?
It's about 3 years. I think it's about four season now. Yeah.
Okay. How did you get involved with them?
I applied. You know, there was a job going. It didn't say at the time who it was for, but it just mentioned fantasy football. So I thought I'd apply for that. Lo and behold, I got the job. I think, as you know, fantasy football scout is a very expert site. It's full of experts. I'm not one of them. I'm a writer, basically.
It's one of the original sites as well.
Absolutely.
When we first got into fantasy, it's almost 10 years ago now, it was really one of the only strictly fantasy-related resources on the web.
But I think one of the reasons it stands out, though, is because it's a well-written site. You know,
Mark Southerns is a very good writer as well. He's an excellent writer. And as mentioned in the book, you know, it's just ballooned for them as a site from that startup through to being essentially the go-to place. And obviously, Mark became the scout at FPL and everything.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask you, so you're writing for them. Like, how does that then, like, what is the process where you become, like, where you start writing a book? Like, is it something that you had pitched, or was it something that sort of just came together?
It very much fell into my lap, to be honest. Penguin, or Yellow Jersey Press, the editorial director there, Tim Broughton, big fantasy fan, member of Fantasy Football Scout, and he approached Mark Southerns. and said, I want you to write a book, please. And Mark, incredibly busy guy, said, I haven't got the time, but I know a man who has, and that was me.
It's a bit of a bad compliment, David.
Mark's too busy. He's a TV celebrity now. You know, you can't.
Exactly. He's a man who can't say no. You know, he was doing all the stuff on site, plus all the, because they'd signed it by that point, they signed a deal with the Premier League to do the content for them as well. So, yeah, he was horrendously busy. It fell to me.
Well, one thing that comes through in the book, and we'll get into the book in a second here, but one thing that I really liked is somebody who doesn't maybe profile as a typical fantasy manager, maybe just because, I mean, I'm an American for one thing, but, you know, I was an English major in college and, you know, never played professional, you know, soccer, as we call it. I never played soccer at any level, you know, so I sort of just... You know, I just fell in love with the game and then fell in love with the fantasy game shortly thereafter. So it was, you know, it was fun to read your perspective because you kind of felt like a little bit of an outsider as well. I don't know if you feel that way, but that was certainly how it came across in the book.
Yeah, I think one of the I think it's the chapter, isn't it, on the numbers game, saying I am not a typical fantasy football player simply because, yeah, I'm allergic to spreadsheets. You know, I don't use spreadsheets, but so many people do.
Yeah, what does a typical fantasy manager look like? I mean, you talked earlier in the book about the cliche of the 35-year-old white man, you know, living at home with his parents. It's not exactly true, is it?
I don't think it's true, is it? I think one of the points of the book again, isn't it, that there's an increasing amount of women playing the game. I think it's about 5% now, which is in FPL terms, it's about 250,000 people. And then, of course, it's people throughout the world. You know, it's the current champion, you know, he's from Tanzania. Most of Norway play. You know, there's just, it's an all-encompassing thing, much like football. You know, these days there is no typical football fan, is there? They just love football.
Big ups to Northern Europe, by the way.
As explained in the book, there's always been that affinity between the Nordic countries and English football. You know, they got to see it far sooner than we did live on their television. So it's perhaps no surprise. Funnily enough, my wife's just been on holiday and she talked to a Norwegian. She was trying to plug my book, basically. The first thing he said was, I'm a Liverpool fan. You know, not I'm Norwegian, I'm a Liverpool fan. That was the first thing he said.
Your point, David, about people first being football fans, then becoming fantasy managers. What I loved about how you opened the book is you opened the book talking about being a football fan generally. It's not just all about playing some sort of game, ethereal game. You come to it as a sports fan. And you talk about the relationship between IRL football and FPL. How do you see, do you see FPL as a product that helps you appreciate IRL football more?
I think so. We certainly enjoy it. Yeah, I think so. Don't you? I mean, it gives you the old thing.
Yeah, it gives you more skin in the game. Watching
absolutely it, exactly
it,
that.
I made a joke that I ended up missing watching the World Cup final because I opted to go on a historic home tour with my wife, knowing that I would rather skip the World Cup final and then be able to play cash a chip to watch Wolverhampton Huddersfield because it will probably have fantasy implications. Right. That said,
that could be an example of warp priorities, by the way.
Yeah, perhaps.
That's the extreme end there, I'd say. But it's true, though, isn't it? You start caring about games that you probably wouldn't even watch normally. You can't help it because you've got whoever, you know, you've got a centre-half, so you want a clean sheet and you want him getting up for a corner and scoring, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a centre-half you didn't even know existed 2 weeks ago until you brought him in.
So you talk about there are naysayers for FPL, people that argue that playing fantasy sort of dilutes the game. There's these two phrases you used, knowledge of the game versus knowledge about the game. I do think that FPL helps you learn more, not just about the particular fantasy game, but about what you're seeing on the pitch. Like, the bonus point system is an interesting and contentious issue, but knowing all the different facets of what goes into accruing bonus points, suddenly you're more able to pick these actions out on the pitch. You see, you're able to more acknowledge the benefit of De Bruyne making a tackle in the middle of the pitch, or a successful take on it, and so on. So it's sort of giving you a code to lay over the IRL game to help you appreciate it.
It is, isn't it? It is, but it only goes so far, doesn't it? Really, if you think if you were to create a proper IRL football team, you're going to want someone like N'Golo Kanté in there, aren't you? Because he's one of the, if not the best defensive midfielder in the world. But as you know, in fantasy terms, he's rubbish. Yeah. You know, he will not get you enough points. Yeah. And that's the downfall or the pitfalls of the game over real football, in a way.
Yeah.
If there's a game out there that you could create a team which was kind of the best team in the world in both fantasy and reality, I guess we go for that. But it's not the case, is it? The game does have its limitations like that.
Yeah, we just recorded a podcast called 10 Tips for FPL Success a couple of days ago. And one of the tips in there, I mean, partially it's for FPL Success. Partially it's just for like making sure you still enjoy the game over 38 weeks because, you know, FPL, it can be a real grind sometimes. Mm-hmm. As much fun as it is, it can start to, especially if you're not having a great season, it can start to really wear on you. And one piece of advice I have in there is to read non-fantasy outlets, you know, just read the Guardian's football coverage, read BBC, whatever. And partially it's just to make sure that you don't see everything in the game through a fantasy lens. I mean, do you do that as well then?
Yeah. I mean, I particularly, obviously the last 2-3 years have been completely immersed in it, writing for Fantasy Football Scout. And yes, to break from it, you know, there's so much osmosis goes on that all this expertise kind of leaches into you. But yeah, you need to stop, just step back, don't you? Otherwise you will go completely bananas and it's not good. You make wrong decisions as well. So,
okay.
Sorry. Go ahead, Brennan.
I was just going to change the subject. So if you have another point to add, go for it.
Well, I guess just the one thing I was curious about is, you know, I actually, you know, there's something about having so many inputs when you're creating FPL related content, whether you're writing about the game or whether you're, you know, doing a podcast about it. I find that it actually sometimes hurts my game a little bit, you know, like my actual personal team suffers a little bit because every single player in the game is touted. And I, you know, at some point or another, if you're on Twitter enough or reading enough fantasy, you know, Fantasy Football Scout articles or whatever, do you find that you've actually become a better manager or a worse manager because of your involvement?
Definitely maybe a better one. But yeah, with anything like this, the coverage is close to saturation now, isn't it? If you choose to seek it out,
right.
And you can't see the wood for the trees after a while, there's so many different shreds of advice, and you can't sift it anymore, can you? So yeah. You do have to either step back or think, no, I'm going with the gut here. You know, you can justify it with stats and this, that, and the other, but sometimes you just have to go with the gut feeling, I think. And then crash and burn in my case, but you know, these things happen.
All right, we have to pivot to a more important aspect of FPL. That's all well and good, but what about your FPL team name? There is this amazing stat in your book, David, where you say, when it comes to naming their fantasy team, imagination was sometimes severely lacking. Close to 3,000 FPL teams were called Man United.
Man United. Yeah.
A not-so-select band of 487 named their team, quote, the special one, while 135 managers, the old pub quiz standard, Norfolk and Good. So, You encountered a few interesting and uninteresting team names. Do you have any theories as to what makes a good FPL team name?
No, not really. I mean, I always go for, well, actually, I changed my naming convention last year, but I normally go for a bad, very weak pun on one of the newly promoted teams every year. This year, I've gone with Dunces with Wolves.
Nice.
I've had Highway to Hull before, I think was one of them.
Those are strong.
Last year,
those
I think strong.
Those are well. Those are pretty strong.
I think Josh and I both tend to shy away from the puns, and
yeah,
we tend to get a little too clever then.
Yeah, I went with Taste of Allardyce last year, which brings up quite a few memories. But yeah, I love the special one, particularly the idea. Oh yes, I'll call myself the special one, and. You're not being very special doing that, are you? Well, in fact, these days he's not special at all. He's just a miserable bastard.
I know.
He really is.
Someone on Twitter, I think it was our friend Dave from Burnley, said, is he just depressed? Like, this is the behavior of a depressed person, right? Like, yeah. This is not like, we know, we've seen this in real life before. You know, it seemed like an act at first. And now I'm just like, maybe he's just sad.
I think he's changed since Real Madrid. That scarred him, I think.
Yeah, I guess so.
It all turned upon him gouging somebody's eye.
And
he was exactly. He couldn't run away from that.
No, it's a shocker, that was. And it's amazing in a way he got away with it, really, didn't he? I mean,
he did.
Still got the jobs, didn't he? You know, still gets the work.
Yeah, moved to Chelsea, moved to Man United.
Yeah, but he's into the third season now, isn't he, United? So that difficult third season, we'll see.
And he didn't win the league a second year, so he's already a little behind the eight ball. So,
and funnily enough, from a fantasy point of view, I'm very wary about picking United players, certainly first up.
My absolute favorite chapter in the book was called Mini League Madness, and David, you go through all types of different mini leagues and why people start mini leagues and what the consequences are for finishing at the bottom. Do you play in any mini leagues yourself? You have a family mini league, or are you in the competitive scout league?
I have an old friends and family one, which is diminished actually over the years. The last two seasons I've won it quite easily. So people are getting fed up with me, I think. I was in a very scary one last year, was the Fantasy Football Scout Moderators and Contributors League. That's full of big hitters.
Yep.
And I think there's 32 in that league, and I finished 15th, I think it was. So mid-table obscurity, I was very happy with that, to be honest.
That's not bad, actually. They won't let me in that league, actually. They're too worried about my fantasy prowess. And so it's one day.
In the fantasy football mag, one of the main one now, of course, is I'm in it against Benny out of ABBA.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. Yeah, cool.
That's I beat him last year. So Benny, if you listen to this, come and get me this year.
There's a mini league in the book that gave me a good idea. You talk about mid-table obscurity, David, and there's a mini league you touch upon where at the end of the season there's a big curry dinner, and 20 people in the league, the top 10 get a free curry and the bottom 10 have to foot the bill. And I love that as a thing to fight for, because I think it seems pretty easy to think of a relegation style punishment or cash for whoever finishes first. But how do you keep the people in the middle of the table interested? And that was a great story, right?
Yeah. And that's the one they have to dress in their corresponding manager's outfits, don't they? If you finish top, you are dressed as Pep Guardiola, you know, and if you finish bottom, you do come back.
I would love to dress as Jurgen Klopp, because then I can just show up in track pants and a polo shirt. I'll be very relaxed.
Yeah, and very shiny teeth.
I agree with Brandon that the mini league chapter is really fun, you know, partially because I think when you're reading, whether you're on, you know, social media or reading scout articles or wherever you're reading your articles or forums, stuff like that, there isn't a lot of mini league talk, you know, because obviously a mini league is a sort of a personal thing. It's not relevant to most people, but in many ways it is the most fun. It's the thing that's the most fun about fantasy.
Side of it, isn't it, I think, as well, very much so.
Well,
it brings out, the worst in people, doesn't it?
There's a quote I jotted down that speaks to that, where you say, David, overall rank is a bit colder and clinical. A mini league is where FPL meets real life. And it's where you have that connection with your friends, your coworkers, and you can have the trash talk at the pub.
It's absolutely.
Very, very fun.
It's just the kind of beating heart, isn't it? It's the human heart of it all. And it's, you know, I think we all aspire to that, don't we? I mean, we all want a great overall rank, but you kind of look at that and think, yeah, okay, I'm quite happy with that, or I'm not happy with that, whatever. But unless you're right, you know, you're right at the top and going for complete and utter glory.
Do you pay much attention to your overall rank?
I do, yeah, I do. I think I mentioned it in the book. Two seasons ago, I managed to get 8,800 or something, which was my best by a long chalk. Yeah. And the last few weeks, seeing that go up, because I had a good end, thanks to Harry Maguire, I think it was.
The old blockhead.
And that was a joy, you know, that was absolutely good old Slavhead Harry. that was an absolute joy seeing the rank go up and up and up and up. You know, getting your green arrows, the fabled green arrows. Really, mini leagues is where you where the heart of it all is. Isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and I guess they typically correspond. I mean, if your overall rank is climbing, you're typically doing better in your mini league too. I don't know that I paid too much attention to my mini league before we started the podcast. It's nice on, you know, especially, you know, we're pretty active on, you know, Twitter and other places. And, it's like a way to keep score a little bit. You can kind of see where you are, you know, just among the community at large. And, but yeah, I agree. We've had a mini league we've been doing with our friends. It's just a mix of people and it's gotten more international as the years have gone on. And I think we're gonna have about like 4 people from the UK this year, Brandon. That's a nice change.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yep.
Send me a link, boys.
You can yeah. we'll send you the PayPal request.
I've never played in it. That's one thing. I've never played in a cash league.
Oh, really?
I've never actually won or lost any money.
Now, Josh and I are not saying on this podcast that we ever play for money. We're not going to confirm or deny that. But if we were it actually weirdly never becomes about the money. It's just the money adds a level of commitment and it adds a level of juice. But at the end of the season, it is absolutely only about bragging rights.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. It's just a pleasant byproduct, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Nice round number to aim for. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about numbers and stats. I feel like we're seeing the explosion of stats and data in the fantasy game right now. You know, you can barely jump onto Twitter without seeing some fascinating new chart, right? Or some long and thorough in-depth analysis. How much of that are you sifting through as you're writing for the Scout site, or I guess even just for putting together this book?
Writing for Scout a lot, or a lot more. But then, you know, I get steers off people who actually know what they're talking about. As it says in the book, you know, I'm an idiot when it comes to stats. I like stupid stats, you know, the amount of Kevins who play in. Numbers confuse me. So I don't really tend to use them, although they're increasingly unavoidable, aren't they? I mean, even in you know, you watch Match of the Day over here, you get expected goals, whatever that means. I've still not worked out XG.
Right.
How can you get 1.2 goals in a game? I don't understand it, you know. But that's my choice.
XG still sounds like a type of sports car that you might be looking into.
Exactly, yeah.
I still feel like XG is primarily used by the use that for sports fans is basically a way to justify why their team should have won. I feel like I see XG brought up most often is like, listen, we may have drawn, but you know, it was a 2.6 XG, you know, so
yeah, it's not our my XG.
Our XG was better than their XG.
But that's alien to me. You know, I don't personally use it, but loads of people do, you know, and it clearly works for them.
So when you finish, you finish around 8,000 overall that one season, David, you attribute that strictly to the eye test.
And pure blind luck, you know?
Yeah. It's not underestimate the role.
I think it was a heady mix. It was the eye test, definitely. Being completely immersed in everybody else's opinions, you know, so you could sift through them and think, I agree with that. I like that. Basically, I got other people to justify my picks for me. You know, it's very nice, very lazy, but very nice. But there is luck, you know, there's always luck, isn't there? You have to respect that. Like I said, I got Harry Maguire. I didn't have a huge amount of knowledge about him, but he scored lots of points for me, you know, kept a couple of clean sheets. Happy days.
There's a book that Josh and I have read called The Numbers Game, Chris Anderson, and you've probably read it as well, David, and the book starts out talking about that match in which it was Liverpool, wasn't it, where they scored a goal off of a ball careening off of a balloon, a blow-up ball that had dropped onto the pitch. And it sets the table for, we're going to talk all about data and how to process that data, but let's be clear, goals are still scored off of balloons that fall onto the pitch.
I think in the book, I think, I can't remember who it was who says this, but the stats all, of course, refer to what has happened. You can hope to predict what will happen, but it's not a guaranteed prediction, is it? You know, it's more likely to be true, but it's not always going to be true.
Yeah.
So you can kind of wedge yourself a bit too strongly to stats, and they'll come and bite you on the arse, really.
Is there anyone you would recommend? I know you've interviewed Peter Blake, a few other people. Peter Blake, who has actually been on our podcast before, a really nice guy. You've interviewed, you know, several people. Are there people who you would recommend, just if, you know, if someone's listening who's maybe a first-time manager, wants to get a data more, you know, what's out there that might be useful?
Peter Blake, you might have heard of. He's very good. Mm-hmm. And honestly, anyone just about the I'm a big fan of Martin Coleman, who writes FPL Poker Player. He writes occasionally, his blogs and stuff. He's extensively quoted in the book as well. So he's great. There's a guy, I can never get his username right on Fantasy Football Scout, Prokopkus or something. A guy who works in Germany who's written a lot of stuff for Fantasy Football Scout. He's, you know, he knows his stuff. He really knows his stuff. But you get, like with everything else, you know, you pick and choose, don't you? You go in there, you kind of sift through all the different things available and decide which appeals best to you, I think.
That's true. I guess you have the fantasy. There's a fantasy football membership too. You know, there's a lot of I think Jaunties will post, like, you know, set piece takers and things like that. There's some
Cole's
charts
imminent
on there.
Cole's imminent, yes.
Yeah, Cole's imminent. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there's so much stuff out there. You know, I think you have to go and look at it all, or look at as much as you can bear, and decide what you want or what's right for you.
So I guess just while we're talking about takeaways, you know, there was one chapter in there that I really enjoyed. It was, the whole chapter takes place on the final day of the, 2016-17 FPL season.
Yeah.
And fantastic chapter. Both, you know, both the guys in there are, you know, it was really nice that they were willing to kind of go through their thinking with you. I really enjoyed it. But there was one moment at the end. It was the name of the guy who finished in second place. I'm forgetting his name right now.
Okay.
He mentions that, you know, there's one, like, I think you asked him something like, you know, how did you finish, you know, how did you get so far that you finished in second place? And he said that, you know, here. He said a few different things. One takeaway was, it was a very practical thing. He said, I feel like, you know, I gained a lot of points when I was, you know, captaining good players away to mid-table squads. Like, that was like his approach during that season, was to, you know, was to captain, you know, players and strong teams on the road to mid-table squads. And I was like, that is such a fascinating practical tip. And like, did you have any other ones that sort of that stuck out to you when you were doing all these interviews? Like, just like advice or that you thought, like, I'm going to use this.
Annoyingly or alarmingly, that's exactly the one that stood out for me as well. It's slightly counterintuitive, isn't it? You know, you always, you tend to look in your team, right? Who's playing at home? Who am I going to captain this week? Are they at home? As he quite rightly pointed out, I think it was particularly with Mo Salah, was it? No, it was two seasons ago, wasn't it? But the idea of top teams, they if they get a goal ahead, everything opens up, doesn't it? And and particularly when they're away, the home team is kind of beholden to attack a bit more, unless you're West Brom. And that opens up possibilities for the better players, particularly in fast-breaking sides. So that really stuck with me as well, I'm afraid. Sorry to cop out here slightly, but that because it was so counterintuitive. You thought, why would you think, oh yes, my captain's away this week, you know, good. It doesn't make sense in many ways, but it certainly made sense for away. I mean, it certainly served him well.
Well, if people are listening, if there's one single takeaway from you, keep that one in mind. Because I think I'm gonna try to adopt that approach a little bit myself.
The other one actually was, I think, who was it? Simon, I think it might have been Simon March, one of the other previous winners. Talk about being patient. You must be patient. Yeah, you know, I'm certainly like this. You know what it's like. You create your side first day of the season. It looks great. And then after a week, you realize it's absolutely awful.
Trigger,
you
know, wild card.
Yeah. You score 22 points or whatever in the first week and it's a disaster.
Yeah.
But actually, I did this last year. And there's a site, isn't there, where you can actually put in your original team and it'll tell you how many points you would have had.
Yep. Yeah.
Which I've not done because I know how horrible
it
will be.
Don't do it, David. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I won't do it. I won't do it. It's Pandora's box. I'm not gonna open it. I'm not gonna open it.
I think I did that around like game week 30 last year and I was like maybe 2 points ahead or something like that. It was like I could have just
that's
not
equally
made
depressing, isn't it?
It was. Yeah. It really was.
2 points ahead is good rather than probably 200 points behind where it would have been. Exactly. But that's the thing, isn't it? You've got to look 4 to 6 weeks ahead, you know, plan for that. And then fine, if it's, you might chuck one out, but not, you know, not try and refurbish your whole side just based on one or two game weeks.
There are some good psychological tips in the book too. The father and son, the father who gaslights his son, making him think that Van Persie is not the right pick, but he should have Rooney while his father worked the switch. And then he ended up with Van Persie scoring a brace, and Wayne Rooney didn't even play, I think it was.
Yeah. It's evil, isn't it? But, you know, always fair in love and mini leagues, I think.
Yes, I agree. It's all fair game. Say that again, Josh.
Oh, I was saying, Brandon, you may recall me gaslighting my way to a mini league win a couple of years ago.
Yep, absolutely. And everyone kind of knew that Josh was gaslighting the whole mini league, and there was really nothing we could do to stop it, which was kind of the sad thing.
Just long. I was in second place for like the entire season. I was reading these long, dramatic emails about how the season was over. I had no chance. Ben, who was in first place, he might as well just give up now because there's absolutely no chance that I can overtake him. And then, of course, I did in the last game week of the season. It was my most glorious moment in fantasy.
And funny enough, you're talking about it now.
Exactly. I know. I probably started, I think it was like we started the podcast the next year. I rode the high of that to the podcast.
Okay. So go ahead, David. Sorry.
I'm saying I'm above all that nonsense, but I probably aren't. I think I'm just winding you up now. Yeah. Or am I?
Just set the wheels in motion.
This is a good segue into our last little point here about FPL perhaps being a disease, or is it a blessing? You talk a bit about perspective as well as addiction in the book. I love the anecdote. It's in the mini league chapter about doing a Ratters, and it was a guy in the mini league who blew a 100-point lead in his mini league on the last few game weeks of the season, and he had to take a whole season off. But of course, he came back, and you make the astute point.
And then did it again.
I did again.
Yeah, he did it twice, didn't he? I think was he not goading a German in the mini league?
Oh, right. He said the spirit of 66 was there. And then the German says the spirit back, of every year that in which Germany won the
Every other year, but 66 pretty much, you never learn, do you? But that, again, it's that human side of it, which I think people who don't play the game don't appreciate. We are all stupid, braying people, aren't we? We can't resist it. We can't help ourselves. And that fantasy really brings that out in people.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about the Matthew Martiniak chapter? I think that's how you say his last name. Just how that came about. I mean, I think it's, you know, maybe the best chapter of the book. I mean, just really fascinating chapter. Did you know his story beforehand, or can you talk about his story a little bit?
I mean, he was one of the many winners of FPL that I contacted, you know, and he was very happy to talk. But I didn't know, how much of an effect mentally the win had on him. As it says in there in the book, he's a very committed Christian. He does lots of missionary work and this, that, and that's I think what everybody knew about Matthew was that when he won FPL, he was halfway up a mountain in Bosnia, I think it was, on a retreat and doing some missionary work, and so that was a great story in itself. But as it came, as we chatted more on email and stuff, he started to kind of open up about how badly the win affected him. You know, he became uber competitive, desperate to defend his title very well, and he's such a, you know, a very giving, charitable kind of guy, and he was suddenly becoming very, very selfish and self-absorbed, which, you know, I think we all are, but Matthew probably isn't. But FPL had kind of made him that way, and he wrote to me about this, saying, "I've never actually told anybody this." I don't think he almost realised himself how much it had affected him. So it was really quite cathartic for him, and for me actually. You know, when I wrote that chapter, I wrote it very much from the heart. I broke the one big rule when you're writing anything, you don't normally ask people that you're writing about to check it over and, you know, approve the copy, because therein lies just hell. You know, people don't check anything. But I did that with Matthew because I wanted to make sure that I told his story correctly. You know, I wanted it to be in his words as much as possible and give it the kind of due attention that I think it deserved. I mean, it's still got some nonsense in there, particularly about his, what's his name, the terrible Gervinho, wasn't it? Was it Gervinho?
Gervinho, sure. Oh, yeah, the dreadlocked.
So, there's a bit of light in there, but it was quite, you know, it's a heavy chapter. But I loved it because it's very much, the tone is different to the rest of the book, but massively, really. I mean, the book is pretty lighthearted. But that wasn't, and I think it deserved a bit of gravitas. And hopefully, I'm glad you liked it. And, you know, I've done Matthew proud with it. I think he was pleased with it. But it's not got back to me since. So if you're out there.
He's probably on the top of another mountain.
Was there anyone else that stood out for you as a good, I mean, maybe not, you know, in that kind of serious vein, but just anybody, I know you talked to a ton of people. Did anyone stand out as a particularly interesting, you know, voice? I mean, I don't want you to necessarily, you know, say some people were better than others, but just like, were there a couple people who you thought were really entertaining or have a fun perspective on the game?
You know what? I mean, again, I'm going to cop out and say they all were, but I found this, I think I mentioned before about the Twitter community. It's so on Twitter. Everybody's very nice and very helpful, you know, and accommodating generally. Not everyone, but nearly everyone. FPL sure. General, Mark, he was talking about, he's a lovely guy. He's very helpful and helped set up the interview with the Saudi prince, which is another chapter in the book. But, you know, generally, the fancy people I've met are very intelligent. They're very knowledgeable. They're just lovely people, you know.
Dave, there was actually only one real answer to that question that Josh just asked you, and that was Josh and Brandon from Always Cheating.
Yeah, yeah.
You're kind
yeah.
of
well,
to
edit this out. Cut this now, and we'll start again.
you were kind enough to include us in the book. There's a chapter in which you do talk a bit about the fantasy community and how it's growing.
Yeah.
Talk about the gaffer tapes and the people at Fantasy Football Scout, and it is an amazing, continually growing community. And I'm bowled over. You tend to associate sort of cliched sports fans as perhaps a bit more aggro or aggressive, but by and large, it's one of the friendlier, more welcoming and willing to share communities.
Absolutely. It's ironic in a way because it's based around football, which is incredibly tribal business, isn't
yeah.
it? It really is, but we're all kind of... Well, we'll have the same ridiculous addiction to a game, don't we?
Yeah, I think the fantasy element does give it some nerd patina, doesn't it? It somehow, especially yeah. if you're talking about it on social, you know, if you're willing to put FPL in your Twitter bio or whatever, you know, it's like you're announcing that you're a certain kind of nerd.
Absolutely. How many people out there who've created two accounts, haven't they, on Twitter? They have their sure. own personal one, and then their FPL, which other people don't know about.
Exactly.
Secrets.
I think we had our podcast for going for about 2 years before I finally linked my personal Twitter feed in our bio. I was like, do I want to do this? Do I want to go that far? But now
it's like
now
coming out, isn't it? You finally come out. Yeah. Yes, everyone.
Exactly.
I like fantasy football.
Exactly. Exactly.
So this book is a huge achievement. And pushing this boulder all the way up the hill, do you think you're going to play FPL this upcoming season? Any differently? Is it going to be more fun now that you have this book sort of on the shelves?
Fun is a very strong word, isn't it? I think I found this when I started writing it. I needed to take the game possibly a bit more serious than I do. Because I do, you know, I like a ridiculous punt on a player. I like to try and find the differential. And invariably I fail, you know, so and obviously my ranking goes down as a result. I'm going to probably have to take it really quite seriously again this season because they'll go, well, you know, aren't you an expert on this? And I keep saying, no, I'm not an expert. I'm a fan. You know, I'm a fan of the game. I can write, but I'm not necessarily a great fantasy manager. I would like to be nice to break into the top 5,000, but based on what happened last season, you know, I had a disastrous end to the season, I think.
Well, it's peaks and valleys, David. You have a good season followed by a bad and so on and so forth.
I think I got up quite close to just about 20,000th, and then it just unravelled horribly towards the end.
Yeah.
But, you know, top 1% is always a good one, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep, so exactly. I think
there's 6 million this year, so top 60,000, that'd do.
I think that's kind of our that's a goal that I think Brian and I both kind of shoot for as well. Yeah, top 1% is that's doable. Even you know, there's a lot of saturation now too, as you mentioned earlier. I mean, it's harder than ever to finish in the top 5,000, 10,000, 20,000. So, yeah, I think it helps to set a realistic goal. And then maybe if you're within that range, you can think about starting to shoot ahead, you know, but, I think it's always good to keep recalibrating your expectations too. If you're having a miserable season, then maybe your goal is just to finish in the top, you know, million or top 100,000 or whatever it may be.
That to me would be a disaster now. I don't know about you. I think my worst
was
750,000 or something. But that was back in the day, you know. And you can almost chart it for when your children are born as well.
Right. You know? Yeah, exactly. I have a 2-year-old daughter. Yeah, that first year I climbed back at the end. I had a big swing back, but I still finished like around 100,000, which felt like
You had about 3 hours sleep. That's why.
Right, exactly, yeah.
These are all excuses, gentlemen. I'm not hearing them.
The bloody good ones, sir.
Well, David, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate
it.
Yeah, everyone go out and check out Wasting Your Wild Card, The Method and Madness of Fantasy Football by David Wardell and Fantasy Football Scout. It's a fantastic book. Can't recommend it enough.
Thank you, guys. Especially if you're in Norway,
Norway, Sweden, Denmark. We'll throw Finland in there.
We'll put a link. We'll put a link in the show notes of the podcast, so you can find more information. Or, of course, just Google "Wasting Your Wild Card" and it'll pop up.
Yep. Yes, please buy it. Yeah, make an impoverished author slightly more impoverished.
And if this
it's not a word.
And if this is your first time listening to the podcast, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at Hail Cheaters on Twitter. David, what is your Twitter handle? It's kind of a hard one to remember.
It's a horrible one. It's at Davo Wava. It's kind of David Wardell, but it's kind of babyfied. I don't know what I was thinking, but it's there now. At Davo Wava.
That's another link we'll throw in the show notes in case.
Thank you.
It doesn't make sense.
You can also you can support the podcast on Patreon. We're patreon.com/alwayscheating. As always, we have our producer thank yous at the end of the podcast. Brennan, you want to read off our producer thank yous?
Absolutely. Thanks to our producers, Mike DiPietro, Stephen Toomey, Sam Streak, Jacob Roberts, Nick Costello, Carl Rasmus, Liam Granley, Chris Howell, and Rafe Khan. Don't forget to subscribe to Always Cheating. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Acast, TuneIn, Pocket Cast, anywhere you get your podcasts. Sincerely, after you're done buying David's book, go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and review. That really does help the pod. We appreciate it. Or just give us a review anywhere that it is that you get the podcast. As Josh said, follow us on Twitter at HailCheaters, Facebook.com/AlwaysCheating. Email us at HailCheaters@gmail.com. Or just visit our website, alwayscheating.com.
All right. Thanks again, David.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.